And we are starting a series today for the next 2 or 3 weeks. And it's actually going to really be good to prepare us for the Christmas season. And it really has to do with heaven. But it's titled, Do You Believe? And today we're going to be talking specifically about faith in what we cannot see when what we can see is falling apart. And it will lead into a discussion on heaven. Hebrews 11, and you can open up in your Bibles with me to Hebrews chapter 11. There are blue Bibles in the pews, benches, where you can grab one and follow along. Hebrews is near the end of the Bible. And the book of Hebrews, chapter 11, verse 1, says, Now faith is the certainty of things hoped for. This is the New International Standard Version, right? Faith is the certainty of things hoped for, a proof of things not seen. The NIV says it a little bit differently, the assurance of things not seen. So we normally say things like, seeing is believing, or I'll believe it when I see it, right? Have you guys ever said that? Seeing is believing, or I'll believe that when I see it. I think we've all said that. Like if I told you I can dunk a basketball, you would say, I'll believe it when I see it, right? Yeah. Don't have to be like so sure that I can't do it. For us, most of the time, seeing is believing. How can we believe in something we have not seen? And the Bible talks about that. That those who live by faith, they live by faith, not by sight. And in Hebrews chapter 11, the verses that follow is what we call the hall of faith or the heroes of the faith, because it's telling us person after person, man after woman, that by faith did incredible things. So let's just kind of quickly glance through Hebrews 11. It starts with Abel and how Abel believed God and he brought a better sacrifice to God. And then it talks about Enoch who believed God and walked with God and by faith was taken up into heaven. Noah who by faith built the ark and delivered his family. And Abraham who by faith left the land of his fathers and went to a land he did not know. And Sarah, by faith, believing, was able to conceive and give birth to Isaac. And then the fall of, you have Moses leading the people out of Egypt. By faith, Moses believes God. He goes to Egypt, brings the people out of Egypt, crosses the Red Sea. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell. By faith, Rahab saved the spies that were spying out the promised land. And it goes on with Samson and David and Samuel and the prophets. Jump down with me to verse 33. It just kind of summates, it says all of these guys, right? All these men and women who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised, who shut the mouths of lions, quenched the fury of the flames, and escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned to strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies. Women received back their dead, raised to life again. It's by faith, they did all of these things. But how can we have faith? Right, that's what we're talking about today. How can we have faith in what we cannot see when what we can see seems to be falling apart all around us? And it does, doesn't it? I mean, the last 2 years, we've heard it again and again, this has been a very difficult 2 years. It has been. Schools were closed for a year. Kids fell into deeper depression than they had before. They were back and lost some of their, you know, the rhythm of their education. And we have just the fact of a global pandemic that has swept across the world. We have politicians that have lost their minds, if they ever had minds to begin with. It's like, what is going on? Things are crazy. Things like English, that used to be like, I remember there were rules, right? That's how you knew if the sentence was correct. But now rules don't matter in English anymore. You can be he, they, she, them. It's just, things are going crazy. Violence, riots we've experienced, and it's not completely over, and it's disheartening because, you know, America isn't perfect, but we have come a long way, and Galatians 5:1 says that it is for freedom that Christ has set us free. Therefore, let's not return to a yoke of slavery, right? Don't go back like when the Israelites wanted to go back. No, don't go back. Jesus has set you free. God has set you free. He's leading you into the promised land. Why would you want to go back? And it seems like we've taken so many steps back when it comes to reconciliation and race relationships in our country. And then violence. I don't know if you heard this week that the mayor of Rochester declared a state of emergency in Rochester because of the record murders that have occurred this year. 72 murders as of last week in Rochester. In 2019, before the pandemic, it was 32. In 2018, it was 28. So it's almost tripled or doubled in Rochester. More than doubled. So things are going crazy, right? Things are falling apart around us. And Americans are Christians. We're more American than we are Christian. We're more Democrat or Republican than we are Christian. We're more black or white than we are Christian. And we forget what it says, that in heaven there is neither Jew nor Greek. The racial differences or the ethnic differences are still there, but the national differences have gone away. There is one kingdom. Jesus says our citizenship is in heaven. That's where we belong. And, you know, there is some good reason to maybe not be afraid, but to, you know, there's so much anxiety and worry. And I look at it from just what the pandemic has shown. Because I always look at the book of Revelation, right, and the second coming and the plagues and what's going to happen in the end times and kind of wonder how will that play out? How will that look? And the pandemic for me has kind of given me a little bit of a glimpse of how some of that might look. Because you have a pandemic that in a matter of weeks spread around the world. And you can see how quickly that can happen. And when it spread around the world, it created a global effect. When we look at the end times, we talk about a global movement. And it talks about how there, you know, I always wondered, like, what does it mean that in the end times, right, there'll be limits on being able to buy or sell and things like that, right? That some won't be able to engage in commerce. And now we're seeing, well, you know there's limits on travel. You can't travel, or some can't travel. People losing their jobs if they don't have a vaccine. You have all that debate. That's a whole other thing that causes tension. But it just gives me a glimpse of how it could look. And when you think about those things, you can begin to feel anxious or panic or fear about what might be coming. But Hebrews is talking about faith. And it's talking about faith to people that were going through trials and tribulation. When we read Hebrews 11, the first part that I just read, when you read that by itself, you think, yeah, but that's Moses and these, you know, David, and they by faith, but they had it made, right? God was with them in an incredible way. But you read on, and you, actually, before we move on, let's go back to chapter 10, Hebrews chapter 10. The writer of Hebrews is writing this about these great men of faith and women of faith to people that were suffering greatly. And he's telling them, when everything in your life seems to be falling apart, you need to have faith. And in chapter 10, verse 32, he says, remember those early days after you had received the light. Remember those early moments when you came to Christ and, you know, how sweet it was? When you endured in great conflict full of suffering. So the people he's writing to, he's saying, remember when you gave your life to Jesus and how hard it was? How hard it got? The great suffering you had to go through. Sometimes you were publicly exposed to insult and persecution, what today we call shaming and the cancel culture. The persecution, and other times you stood by those who were treated that way. You suffered along with those who were in prison and joyfully accepted the confiscation of your property. Things that one day will happen and is happening still today in many places in the world, where they lost their property, their houses, their homes, because they decided to follow Jesus. And Paul's telling, or the writer of Hebrews is telling them, remember that. Remember those days? So do not throw away your confidence. Or actually, he says, right, they took your property, you joyfully accepted. So they joyfully accepted people, the government coming in and taking their stuff because you knew that you yourselves had a better and lasting possession. See, they have hope in something else, not in their earthly property or possessions. So verse 35, so do not throw away your confidence. It will be richly rewarded. You need to persevere so that when you have done the will of God, you will receive what he has promised. For in just a little while, he who is coming will come and not delay. But my righteous one, says, my righteous one will live by faith. That's talking about us now. But my righteous one will live by faith, and I will take no pleasure in the one who shrinks back. This is God speaking. His children will live by faith. He takes no pleasure in those who shrink back. But we do not belong to those who shrink back and are destroyed, but to those who have faith and are saved. That word shrink occurs in another place in the Bible. It's in Revelation chapter 12, where it's talking about those who are before the throne of God, those who are waiting in heaven for us. And it says that they triumphed over him by the blood of the Lamb. Right? They triumphed over the enemy, over the dragon, over Satan, by the blood of the Lamb and the word of their testimony. They did not love their lives so much as to shrink from death. That's what it's talking about. So now let's go chapter 11, Hebrews chapter 11, starting in verse 35. Because we already looked at all of those, that first part of the chapter, all of those men who by faith, right, by faith the walls fell down, by faith they crossed the Red Sea, by faith God delivered Daniel from the fire. But then he says this in verse 35, the middle of the verse. But there were others who were tortured. So now he's saying, see, there were others who by faith were tortured, who by faith refused to be released so that they may gain a better resurrection, who by faith faced jeers and flogging and even chains and imprisonment. They were put to death by stoning and were sawed in two. They were killed by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, and mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains, living in caves and in holes in the ground. They did all of that by faith. So how do we have faith in what we do not see and in the hope that God has for us? Well, the first thing is we have faith in the one who spoke the promise. If you've noticed, the word promise occurs a lot in these chapters. He who has promised receives the promise. So have faith in the one who spoke the promise. So let's go back to Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1. Looking at the NASB version, it says, now faith is the certainty of things hoped for, a proof of things not seen. So that word in the Greek is hypostasis. So we look at, okay, what does that word mean? I looked it up and I realized that it occurs in one other place. It's fascinating. It occurs in one other place in Hebrews chapter 1, verse 3, that says, the Son is the radiance of God's glory, the exact representation of his being. And it's the very same word. It's the very same word that is translated in Hebrews 11 as confidence, as assurance. It's because it can mean being or nature. So what he's saying is that it's the confidence, not in the promise itself. It's not that I hope I get heaven. It's the promise in the one who spoke it, in his nature, in the very being and nature of God. As it says in Hebrews, when he spoke to Abraham, as where God cannot lie. Right? And it says all the verses, if you go all the way back to Genesis 20:22, and here in Hebrews 11, it keeps saying that Abraham believed what God said to him. He believed God's words. Even though Abraham never saw the promise fulfilled, he believed his words. When he took Isaac up on the mountain to sacrifice him and he comes back down the mountain, God says, because you believed what I spoke to you. Right? So it's believing in the one who spoke the promise, not just in hopeful, you know, wishing that it's going to happen one day, but it's in the one who spoke that promise to us, the one who promises heaven to us. That's why we can have faith in what we do not see, because even if we have not seen it, we have heard his voice. That's why it is so, so important that we hear his voice. And then he goes on, right? So now faith is a certainty, a confidence in the one, in the being, the nature of the one who has made the promise, and proof of the things not seen. Proof is the evidence of things. It's how we test something. So what is the test? The faithfulness of God. That what he has said, that his word will be fulfilled. And we see it also in Hebrews 11:6. And without faith, it is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists. See, it's not just believing in hope alone, but it's believing in him and that he exists and who he is. And he rewards those who earnestly seek him. So all of these people that he's writing to, right, when all the world, when everything was falling apart around them, they believed. When Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were being thrown into that fire, they believed. When everybody else around them was bowing down, they believed. Right? When everything around us is falling down, we have faith. We are not like those who shrink back and lose our faith, because we know in him in whom we have believed. You know, there's... We're talking about heaven. Here's the question. Do we believe God? Do we believe he will fulfill his promise? Man, thank you for that answer. And here's why. You know, we may not have seen it, but we know. You know, I record, especially when I live in Atlanta, because I always miss the games. And when football is on, I love watching football. And if I can't watch the game, I'll record it. And even if it's the playoffs, or if my team is playing, if it's NBA playoffs, I'll record it. And I don't like to know the outcome of the game. I want to watch it from beginning to end. But sometimes now a notification will come up, or somebody will tell me, oh, the Dolphins won, or the Miami Heat won. And I'm like, why'd you tell me? I was waiting to go home and watch the game. Now I know. But then I go home, and I play the game, and I'm watching the game, and it gets down, let's say, it gets down to the fourth quarter. There's 5 minutes left, and they're down by 2 touchdowns. If I didn't know the outcome already, I'd be on the edge of my seat. I'm like, oh, no, no, what's going to happen? How are they going to come back? No, how are they going to do it? But now that I've been told the outcome, I've been told, no, they win. I don't know how they're going to do it. But I know in the next 15 minutes, in the next 5 minutes, they're going to score 2 touchdowns and probably get a 2-point conversion, and win the game. That's how we have faith, because we know what God has promised. And even though we look at the world and we're like, I don't know how he's going to fix this. I don't know how it's going to happen. I have no clue how God is going to make something out of this mess, but I know that he is. I am confident. I have faith in what I have not seen, because I have faith in the one in whom I have heard. And the other thing, as we look at these verses, like have faith. Faith is the assurance of things hoped for, right? Things we have not seen. We apply these personally to our lives. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with taking this verse and applying it to our life. For example, in Genesis, when God tells Abraham to take Isaac up to Mount Moriah and to sacrifice his son there. And when he's up there and God provides a substitute, provides the ram, and saves Isaac's life, Abraham comes down from the mountain, from Mount Moriah, and says, you are Jehovah Jireh, right? The Lord my provider. And then he says this phrase, because on the mount of the Lord, it will be provided, singular. On the mount of the Lord, it will be provided. We take that verse, Jehovah Jireh, the Lord our provider, and we apply it to, you know what, man, I gotta pay the mortgage, man. I don't have enough for rent. I don't have enough for groceries, or how am I going to pay for college? And we remember, you are the Lord our provider. And there's nothing wrong with that. But we tend to only use it for finances when it had nothing to do with finances. Right? It was on the mountain of the Lord, it was provided. Well, what was provided? The Mount Moriah, where God told Abraham to go, would one day be Jerusalem. And on that very mount, the temple mount, the temple would be built, where sacrifices would be offered, and the tabernacle and the temple of God would be. And it was on that very hills where Jesus Christ went and gave his life. On the mountain of the Lord, on that mountain, it was provided 2,000 years ago where Jesus gave his life. So we can take it, personally and apply it to our personal need today. But when we look at Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1, right, faith is, okay, what are you hoping for? Your kids to come to Christ, or for that promotion, or for that relationship, or for that job, for getting into the college you want to get into, whatever it is, you can hope for it and say, yeah, I hope, I believe that the assurance of things hoped for. That's okay. But that's not what Hebrews 11 is really talking about. In the whole context, he's talking about a promise. And he's not talking about promises as much as he's talking about a singular promise, which is heaven, which is glory. Therefore, the first thing that we do is we have faith in the one who spoke the promise, and then we cling to the promise. We cling to heaven, not to this world. We hold on to heaven. We grab a hold of heaven. So I want you to go back with me after you write that down. Go back to Hebrews chapter 11. Let's go to verse 8. So in Hebrews 11, chapter 11, verse 8, going back to Abraham, listen to what it says. By faith, Abraham, skipping ahead a little bit, by faith, Abraham made his home in the promised land, like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. Okay, so there's promise, singular, and it's obviously relating to the promised land, the land of Canaan. But then look at this jump that it makes in verse 10. For he was looking forward to the city with foundations, whose architect and builder is God. So he jumps. He's talking about Canaan, but he's saying, but really what he's hoping for, what Abraham is longing for, what he's clinging to, is not the physical land that he walked around that God said he would give him. He's looking and longing for a spiritual building, a city with a foundation that God has created. Jump down to verse 13. All of these people who by faith, by all, were still living by faith when they died, they did not receive the things promised. Well, some of them did. Some of them did get into the promised land. David did become king. Solomon did build the temple. But the things promised that it's talking about is what's to come. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance. Listen to this. Admitting that they were foreigners and strangers on earth. Right? Foreigners and strangers. So even though they're in the promised land, a lot of them were in Jerusalem. They were in Israel. But he's saying that that's not their home. They were strangers and foreigners. I wonder how many of us really feel like strangers on earth. How many of us actually feel at home here? People, verse 14, people who say such things show that they are looking for a country of their own. If they had been thinking of the country they had left, they would have opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. Going back to those who did not shrink away, but in what sense? What does he mean that God is not ashamed to be called their God? Because their longing was for heaven and for God. Would he be ashamed of those whose hearts, like Jesus put it this way, whose treasure is on earth rather than in heaven? Verse 39, of those who we read about that gave by faith their lives, these were all commended for their faith, yet not one of them received what had been promised. Since God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. So the promise is still to come. Even in chapter 13, verse 14, he says, "For we do not have an enduring city, but we are looking for the city that is to come." So as I said, Jesus puts it this way. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moth and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. And then he says this, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also.
where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So where is your heart? What are you longing for? They were longing for heaven. They didn't cling to this world. They were clinging to heaven, longing for heaven. Do we believe what it says in Matthew? Do we believe what it says in Philippians 3:20? That we are our citizenship is in heaven, and we eagerly await the Savior from there. Tony Evans says, our home is in heaven. We just work here. We're just here temporarily. We are passing through on our way to our home in heaven. Do we believe what it says in Romans 8, where it talks about our longing, our groaning? The world groans. And it says, so do we. We groan for Christ's return, for the redemption of the sons of God. And in 2 Corinthians 5, where Paul is talking about, he talks about this body as a tent. He also refers to it as like jars of clay, of just, you know, this is a tent. And he says, for we know that the earthly tent we live in will be destroyed. This is 2 Corinthians 5. You don't need to open this necessarily, but if you want to be able to go back to it later, 2 Corinthians 5. He says, for we know that the earthly tent we live in is destroyed. But we have a building from God, an eternal house in heaven, not built with human hands. Meanwhile, we groan, longing to be clothed instead with our heavenly dwelling. Colossians chapter 3, verse 1 and 2 says this. Since then, you have been raised with Christ. Set your hearts on things above, where Christ is. Where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things. And the reason I bring both of these up together is because it says the word set. In English, set your hearts on things above, where Christ is. And set your mind on things above. Well, both of those words, I looked them up, both of those words are two different words. In English, it just says set and set. Set your heart, set your mind. But in English, but in the Greek, they're different. The first set, right, since you have been raised with Christ, you are seated with Christ, set your hearts on things above means to seek, to strive after, or to aim at. It basically means to search for it, to set your attention on it. It's like Googling something, right? What are all the things we searched, we researched this week? And we looked up all kinds of things, right? So something comes to your mind, you're like, oh, let me Google that. Let me see what that is. And that's what it's talking about. Just set your mind, like search it out. Discover it. I was looking at talking about heaven, right? So I started to research. And we're going to talk about this next week. I started to research, what is heaven like? What does the Bible say about heaven? What will we be able to do in heaven? What will it be like in heaven? So I started to search all of that, all of those different articles and reading things, and that led me to something else we'll talk about eventually, which is the constellations. And I started to Google that and search the constellations and what the Bible says about constellations. That's what it's saying in Colossians 3:1. Search out heaven. How do we cling to heaven? How do we grow our affections to heaven? Research it. If you're going on vacation, say you're going to like Australia or Hawaii or somewhere, Colorado, and you start to Google, right? You're going to start searching, and all right, what can we do there? What is it like? And the family starts to get excited. You're talking, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to see this. It's going to be amazing. I can't wait. The more you search about your vacation, the place you're going, the more excited you get, and you just can't wait for the day to come. That's what he's saying. Search heavens. Focus on the things above. Put your heart and your treasure there. Research it. Search it so that you're longing for it, so that you're like, oh, heaven is going to be amazing, man. I can't wait. I can't wait to see heaven. And not just that. It's because it talks about longing. It's not just excitement, but it's longing. It's like, and here's where it gets to not just heaven, but Jesus. The more closer you get to Jesus, the more you want to be with Jesus and see Jesus. It's like if your son or child goes off to serve in the military. You can't wait for them to get back. Like the Heatons have talked about how when they were in Africa, they missed their kids. They actually moved to Syracuse to be close to their grandkids. We long to be with those that we love.
I we're planning a trip to Atlanta so we can see our kids after the holidays, right? We miss them. We long to be with them again. And it's hard when we have to leave them. Our heart should be longing for Jesus, walking with him, knowing him, getting to know who he is. Therefore, we long to be with him. But then that second set, right? So the first one is to just search, to set your mind, your thoughts on discovering what heaven is like. And we're going to talk about that next week. What is heaven like? But the other one, since then you have been raised with Christ, set your mind. Okay, that's the first one. So set your mind on things above, not on things, on earthly things. This word means to understand or to agree together, to be harmonious, to be in agreement, to be on the same page. So this one is different. One is search something out. And the other one is to get to a point where you agree with, you are in harmony with heaven. It's like in heaven, in Revelation, it tells us about the great crowd of witnesses that are seated below the throne. And they're sitting there and they're crying out to God. In heaven, they are crying out to God and they're asking, Jesus, Father, when are you going to send Jesus back? When are you going to bring your kingdom of righteousness on the earth? They're crying out and asking God to hurry up and return. And when our hearts are in harmony with heaven, when our hearts are crying out to heaven and we're in echo with them, in agreement with them, and we're saying, Jesus, come back. Jesus, come back. Like it says in Revelation 22, the Spirit and the bride. We are the bride. The Spirit and the bride say, come. But I wonder how much of the church is actually, even if we don't say it with our words, are actually hoping that Jesus takes his time. Don't come back just yet, Jesus. I'm not ready for you to come back. I'm not ready to go to you. I was reminded recently, because of the pandemic and everything, I was reminded of something that Christy and I decided a long time ago. We even put it in our will. We were talking, and she says, you know, if she got sick, she said, don't let them put me on a respirator. And it reminded me. We talked about it, and we put it in our will. If anything happens to us, and we, you know, our living will, if we get... We're good. We're ready to go. We sing the song, No Fear in Death. I'm not afraid of death. I am afraid of maybe how I might die. Like, I don't want to burn. I don't want to fall from a building. I don't want my airplane to crash. I mean, I'd like to go quietly in my sleep, or, you know, or, but I'm not afraid of going. So where are we? Do you believe? Do you long and groan inwardly for heaven? Do you love and long for his presence, for his return? As we go into worship here, I want to ask and make sure if there's anyone here who doesn't know that hope. That today is the day. Don't walk out of here today without knowing that your spot is reserved in heaven. And we talked about this in Sunday school. Here's the attitude that I want us to go into worship with. Because we're talking about heaven. There's a story in Exodus chapter 17 where Moses is praying. The Israelites are fighting the Amalekites. And Moses is praying up on the mountain. So he's got his hands lifted to heaven, and he's praying. And his arms get tired, and he drops his arms. And when he drops his arms, the Israelites start to lose. And he raises his hands again, and the Israelites start to win. Aaron and Hur notice this. So they get a rock, and they tell Moses, Moses, sit down, and we will hold your hands up. So they then hold his hands up throughout the afternoon and evening, and the Israelites win the battle. And then the Lord tells Moses, right, to write this down, and it says this phrase. He calls him Jehovah Nissi, the Lord my banner. And it says in the English, it says, because hands were raised against the throne of God. So when you read it, you think, well, that must mean the Amalekites raised their hands against the throne of God. But it was Moses who had his hands lifted up. And there's a little note
I looked down and it says that this phrase is unclear. This phrase in the Hebrew is unclear. So then I opened up, because I heard about it this week, so I researched it. This is another thing I researched. I opened up a commentary, and I read in the commentary, and it says, literally, what it means, literally what Jehovah Nissi means is a hand on the throne. It's talking about Moses, and his hands were raised and lifted up, and he was touching the throne, the banner of God. So as we worship, can we, whether you raise your hands physically or not, can we lift our hearts to the throne? Can we lift our hearts and say, God, you have created heaven and eternity within us to love you, to desire you, to long for you, and forgive us in any and in every moment where our hearts and our affections have been more rooted in this world than in our heavenly promise and inheritance. Father, you desire for us to love life, to be full of joy in this life, but to not love this life more than the one that's coming, to be rooted in heaven, to be grounded in your presence, and to be longing for your coming more than anything else. And if you're here this morning and you want to say, I want to touch the throne, and you haven't ever before, you don't know what it is to touch the throne of God, to touch heaven, to have heaven in you, but you want to. You want to this morning. Will you just cry out to Jesus? Say, Jesus, save me. Forgive me of all my sins. Wash me and fill me with your presence, with your love, with your voice. Teach me all about who you are and who I am in you and what you have for me. Amen. Let's worship.